Tensions remain at an all-time high, with political leaders and activists behind bars. The situation in Bahrain shows no sign of abating.
When they came to know that the photos was sent from jail, they started attacking everybody and they tortured them.
As inmates protest against the unfavorable conditions in Bahrain's main prison, the authorities respond with force.
Naji Fatil is one of them. There are so many we have documented. Naji Fatil reports he could not walk because of the beatings he has received.
Human rights activists continue to accuse the authorities of creating a system of apartheid. I put these allegations to the government's main rights watchdog in an exclusive interview.
Apartheid? I think this is a dream. Dream, I mean apartheid. I mean, you know what the definition of apartheid?
As demonstrations sweep across the country and Western leaders continue their silence, I investigate how things have changed since I was last in Bahrain. Since the popular uprising flared up in Bahrain in 2011, it has been said the human rights situation in the country has deteriorated. Bahrain is the only country in the Persian Gulf where a Sunni minority rules over a Shia majority. The authorities have reportedly unleashed a systematic crackdown on dissenting voices and have been accused of transforming the mass movement, which once called for political and economic reform, into a sectarian struggle. The country is gripped with political deadlock, as recent elections were boycotted by Al-Wafaq, the main opposition party. Curious to see the extent of the human rights violations, I went to Bahrain last year, and what I witnessed was rather disturbing. I met opposition leaders, victims of torture, child prisoners, families who had lost loved ones due to police brutality. And many a times, I experience a brutality firsthand. Since my return, two of the prominent people whom I'd met, Sheikh Ali Salman, leader of Al-Wafaq, the main opposition group, and human rights activist Nabil Rajab, were both incarcerated. Accounts of torture continue to emerge from the country, but the UK's Foreign Minister, Philip Hammond, said Bahrain was showing significant reform. To me, it seemed things were taking a turn for the worse. How much worse was the question? The only people that can answer my questions are the activists that are on the ground, and as going back to Bahrain is no longer an option, the only place to meet them is at the United Nations, where several of them are going to be attending the Human Rights Council session, so I'm going to Geneva now. Up with Neda Al-Salman, an activist and a good friend of Nabil Rajab.
When you met me in Bahrain 6 months ago, the situation is worse now. As you know, you met Sheikh Ali Salman and you met Nabil Rajab. Both of them now is behind bars. So that's a proof that the situation is worsened. More prisoners, jailed protesters or children have been jailed for the past, and in a weekly basis, we have like 10 or 15 arrests. Sometimes it's more, it depends on the situation.
The arrest and incarceration of Sheikh Ali Salman had come as a shock to me. The court jailed the Shia opposition leader for 4 years after convicting him of inciting disobedience and hatred in the Sunni-ruled kingdom. When I had interviewed him, he seemed moderate in his views and had called for a democratic and fair country for all Bahrainis. So why was he being targeted?
I think they are targeting him because he's a man of a principle. He doesn't concede before neither the persuasion nor threats. And he is stuck to the principles stuck to the commitments by the opposition. They have a baseline, and he said, we are not going to concede beyond that.
The court found Sheikh Salman not guilty of the most serious charge he faced, inciting violence and calling for the overthrow of the monarchy. His sentencing angered many of his supporters, who marched in the streets calling for his release. Meanwhile, Sheikh Ali Salman's lawyer accused the authorities of failing to give him a fair trial.
I don't believe that this trial was complying with the Article 14 from the International Convention related to the political and civil rights. Absolutely, it is not complying with.
From the course of the trial, we know it is not fair for many reasons. It has been based on one witness from the Ministry of Interior, just one witness, who relied on or to recording of speeches by Sheikh Ali Salman, but selectively, you know, it's montaged, you know. So his lawyers countered by saying, okay, why don't you show the whole material? But the court refused. The second thing is that they didn't allow them for oral defense. They didn't allow Sheikh Ali Salman or himself to defend himself. So it is all one-sided trial.
Dozens have been detained by the authorities for expressing their opinions, in particular, those who have shared them on social media platforms. Fadl Abbas, who is the Secretary General of the National Democratic Assembly, one of Bahrain's five main opposition groups, has been sentenced to 5 years in prison for describing the Saudi airstrikes in Yemen as a violation of international law. Nabil Rajab is currently serving a six-month sentence for allegedly insulting government institutions on Twitter. He's also facing additional charges in a separate case in relation to comments said to have been posted by him regarding incidents in Jaw prison. If convicted, he could face up to 10 years in prison. Jaw is the longest long-stay male prison in Bahrain. The prison, which contains many prisoners of conscience, has become synonymous with the systematic use of psychological and physical torture. Many NGOs and detainees have criticized the conditions which the prisoners are subjected to. In addition to torture being carried out on a daily basis, there are reports of overcrowding, sleeping in the corridor, sharing the toilet with 10 or 20 other inmates, which have resulted in the spread of diseases. On the 10th of March, things took a turn for the worse when an altercation took place between a family member of a detainee and a police officer. When news of this reached the inmates, they rioted and began to blockade their buildings in protest.
The prisoner went on protesting inside jail, and that's how everything went wrong during that time. They were attacked inside while they were in prison by tear gas. And we have lots of evidence. If you see the reports of Bahrain Center for Human Rights, which was published in the website, you will see that some of the images which was sent to us by some of the prisoners shows the tear gas around their cells. And they were even with shotgun. They were hit with shotgun and they started attacking them. Later, when they came to know that the photos was sent from jail, they started attacking everybody and they tortured them.
Inmates had filmed the assaults with mobile phones, and it is said the police rounded up the phones and destroyed them within hours, but images had already been leaked onto social media.
And destroyed floodlights.
Authorities reported a different version of events, claiming that police controlled acts of violence and vandalism. They said the inmates' families asked to let a relative in with them for visitation, but their request was denied because a visitor did not carry any ID. This video was released to show this side of the story.
Then entering the barricaded building.
Well, this is montaged video. And you can play with videos. There might be some shots which are, but is it within the context? Maybe those are the roof were running away from the smoke bombs, which were thrown inside the walls. That's why for 1 month, the government would not allow even the loyal committee for responsible for prisons. This is the question I asked him. When did you visit the prison? You said you visited, but when? It is after a long time. It's not instantly. That's why the government did not allow even its agencies to visit the prison. And that's why the High Commissioner asked for independent investigation. We say there should be an independent investigation because there are casualties among the prisoners. Okay, there are casualties among police, but there are more casualties among prisoners.
Human rights defenders accuse the authorities of failing to address the situation in Jor. Wanting to get to the bottom of this, I spoke to Abdullah Darazi, the vice chairman of the government's main human rights watchdog, NIHR.
With reference to talking about what happened recently in Jor prison, NIHR sent a delegation. I headed the delegation, visited the prison, and interviews 55 inmates, detainees, prisoners there, different nationalities. And of course, we have a report we already submitted, and the report is going to be on our sites very soon. The claims of mistreatment, if it happens, it is not systematic. It could happen that, let's say, one person probably, or one policeman or one official inside jail have committed such atrocities, and it happens, I think, all over the world, many places that the police also have, take the initiative on their hand, and they start, let's say, beating some prisoners and so on. But it's something is not, neither the king, neither the government, neither the Ministry of Interior is about, because as soon as this happens, when the rioting happens in Jor prison on 10th of March, straight away the public prosecutors, they went there, the police ombudsman went there, special investigation unit went there, we in IHR went there also, and form investigation, and there are already some of the policemen who committed such atrocities are put on a trial.
First, there is, he said, 55 comprising all different nationalities. But this is not nonsense, because there, the other nationalities were not involved in this. Those who were involved are the political prisoners, are the Bahrainis, and they are around 1,500 people. Second is that, I told you, there are now people, these people, prisoners who were being assaulted are now being prosecuted. So I don't take this credible. Credibility comes from thorough investigation from a really independent body.
In the weeks following the riot, police transferred many inmates into another part of the prison known as Building 10, where it is claimed they were subjected to severe torture and ill treatment.
Naji Fatil is one of them. There are so many we have documented. Naji Fatil report, there are reports he could not walk because of the beatings he has received. There are so many other prisoners, people, I mean, as young as 17 years old, as old as 40, 50, those who were severely tortured because of the Jor.
Naji Fatil is a human rights defender, serving a 15-year sentence on charges of attempting to overthrow the government. Inmates said he wasn't part of the riots, but was being targeted for previously protesting against the prison's conditions. According to reports, police forces or mercenaries, a term used by many human rights defenders in Bahrain, consist of mainly naturalized Sunni citizens recruited from Pakistan, Yemen, Syria, and Jordan. An event was put on at the House of Lords to highlight the extensive violations carried out by the security services. Parts of my documentary, Bahrain, The Muted Revolution, was shown to show the extent of the atrocities being carried out, and I was asked to describe what I had experienced firsthand.
I attended many demonstrations and protests while I was out there. And I will say, all in all, they were very peaceful. The protesters were just asking for their rights, using political chants, religious chants. But the police wasted no opportunity to attack us. And in one occasion, they didn't even spare a funeral procession that we'd attended. They removed the security cameras around a local supermarket, so there would be no evidence of the kind of force and brutality they were going to inflict upon us.
The police brutality I witnessed had haunted me for months after I returned. I wanted answers to why a government thought it was okay to treat its citizens like this, and the only person who could give me any sort of insight was Darazi, so I showed him a clip from my film.
Heavy-handed crackdown by security forces.
They're afraid of Shia. I mean, I can't help it. I born a Shia. My rest nation are Shia.
As high-profile leaders and activists remain in jail, the government intensifies its attack on the opposition.
When I visited the towns like Karazakan, Sanabis, I mean, the police presence was higher. It's a contrast between life in Manama, in, say, Rafah. But when you go into these towns, there's checkpoints, there's helicopters, there's tear gas every night. It, for me, it was like being in an occupation.
No. Listen, of course, I'm as I'm in IHR, independent, and I'm not, let's say, defending the government or against the opposition or something. No, we are, as an institution, we are a mediator in order to promote and respect for human rights in the country. So when you come, this is politic. So if it's political situation, and I said it is for the politician to solve. And as I said, the politician we're talking about either from the government or politician from the opposition. They have to come to a solution. What we need is to have a deeper thinking of learning of what's happening around the world and start seriously to solve our problem and move forward, because it's no use to cry on a spilled liquid. It's spilled.
But is it so easy to just move forward? A report titled Apart in Their Own Land, published by three NGOs, stated that the vast majority of police violence targets the Shia citizenry. Shia experience violence in the form of police action against protests, arbitrary detention in government holding centres and prisons, government torture largely to extract false confessions, tear gas employed against villages, interference with the freedom of movement, and the denial of medical care. Last year, a video emerged showing an unknown prisoner believed to be a Shia being taunted by the police along sectarian lines.
It is worse. I mean, they have contracted with the Jordanian police. The problem is the police in Bahrain are not Bahrainis, or they are naturalized citizens, and majority of them from a certain sect which don't know how to deal, or they're not from the same culture, and they come with this predisposition idea that all these Shia prisoners are not Muslims, so mistreating them is just part of the process. And that's another problem, that torture become an institution in Bahrain and become a serious problem, and it's systematic.
Shias bearing the brunt of state violence wasn't the only issue that had been raised. During my stay in Bahrain, I had heard many accounts of systematic discrimination against the Shia population, from religious practices, education, to employment. The report Apart in Their Own Land also described the situation as being close to a Shia apartheid. I put this allegation to Darazi.
Apartheid? I think this is a dream, I mean, apartheid. I mean, you know what the definition of apartheid? Zimbabwe before and South Africa, that is apartheid. Now, I am a Shia. I'm a Shia, right? So where's the apartheid against me not to have a position in the government or to have an official position?
Well, even in South Africa, there were blacks who were in some government, and some Asians in some government, but this does not make South Africa an apartheid. It is the, it's more, I mean, if you say, when we speak about equal citizenship, this is, you know, when you have a privileged group versus deprived the group, then you got something you call apartheid or sectarian. You see, in Bahrain, there are some places that are exclusive. For example, Rafah. You cannot have Shi'i or even commoner to reside on in that town. And now, unfortunately, we have more and more of that trend in housing.
Bahrain for a long time has enjoyed good relations with the West, and many activists have accused its two main allies, the US and the UK, for turning a blind eye to the regime's atrocities. Bahrain is home to the US Navy's Fifth Fleet and will now also house a naval base for the UK.
The West speak one something and practice contrary. They speak, they propagate or about human rights, democracy, I don't know why they enable this, empower these regimes and protect them. There is the biggest, maybe after NATO power and deployed force, is the American in the 5th Fleet and bases and so on, and that's an armament and the training and intelligence.
Recently, the U.S. announced plans to lift an arms ban on Bahrain.
We've got to sit down with their leaders now and determine, now that the restrictions have been lifted, what is it they need. Important to recognize that Bahrain has made some progress on human rights reforms and reconciliation.
We are victims of our location where the neighbor of a very influential country, a very important country, a very important country to the West. We are a victim because we have the U.S. Base in Bahrain. We are a victim because of the interest, because of the oil. That's why the world is turning a blind eye about Bahrain. When it comes to Bahrain, they will never cover Bahrain. And they will try to think of their interest first before talking about Bahrain. All the evidence shows that Bahrain violated the human rights situation. All the evidence, everything. I mean, you have all the evidence written as well as documented. And I'm sure all these countries, all the West, they know very well that Bahrain violated the human rights situation. But the interest comes first.
The neighbor Salman was referring to is Saudi Arabia, who played a pivotal role in crushing the protests in Bahrain in 2011, when it sent its troops into the country. She went on to tell me that though Saudi forces are no longer on the streets of Bahrain, she feels Saudi is still influencing the political situation in the country. It seems not much has changed since I left Bahrain, and from the accounts I heard, the human rights situation seems to be getting worse, but relations with Western allies seem to be strengthening even further. I still have one question left, which is, what is the way forward?
And Bahrain is a very small country. I mean, we're talking about 700 square kilometers and the population of over a million. This can be solved easily. It needs political will from both sides.
So, I mean, you say that, you know, you need political will, you need dialogue. But if the leader of the opposition is incarcerated, you know, locked away, is the political will really there?
Well, this is a judiciary that has, let's say, put him or sentenced him in the yard. I'm talking about that when there is a political will, there is political will release Mandela, who was sentenced for, he spent over 26 years. So it doesn't, it can happen. It can happen because if you have important goals that you want to move forward, anything could happen. If you have the will, strong will from the leadership, let's say political leadership, and strong will from the opposition.
But is the will really there from the leadership?
When the ruling family realize that it is for its long-range interest to rule and to get legitimacy is to concede the rights of the people, all the people, not only Shia, Sunni, and to really implement the constitution. The constitution stipulates that the people are the source of power and sovereignty of the country. So when that is applied, and of course, before applying this, you have to, diffuse the present situation, the situation we are in a crisis. So you have to diffuse the crisis. You have to enter into serious negotiation with the opposition such that you make a roadmap to transfer from a crisis to, stable rule.